Sky Broadcasting and Universal present a Paramount release, Vertigo, starring James Stewart as Scotty, Kim Novak as Madeline, and Barbara Bel Geddes as Midge, directed by Alfred Hitchcock. Audio described by Therese Birch on behalf of MCS Agency. San Francisco police officer Scotty is forced into early retirement with a debilitating fear of heights after he witnesses a fellow officer fall to his death. But he has to draw on his detection skills and overcome his fears when he's drawn into an intriguing web of mystery and deceit when an old college friend asks him to tell his wife. A close-up of Kim Novak's face. Her eyes look to one side, then the other. A close-up of one eye, staring. The eye turns bright red, opening wide as if in terror. A purple spiral turns in the pupil of the eye, increasing in size. The eye disappears. A blue spiral turns, becoming larger. Abstract, brightly coloured geometric shapes on a black background. Orange spiral disappears into the red eye. The top rung of a fire escape at night. A hand grips it, then another. A man climbs from the fire escape onto a roof and runs. He's followed by a uniformed police officer, then a man in a suit and trilby, John Ferguson, or Scotty. In the distance, San Francisco Bay. The man runs across the rooftops as the policeman shoots at him. The man jumps across a gap between buildings and onto a sloping tiled roof, pulling himself up and running away. The policeman jumps onto the sloping roof, almost losing his footing and following him. Scotty jumps across, gripping the tiles, but slips down, losing his hat and clinging on to the guttering, which bends under his weight. The policeman turns back. Scotty looks down at the sheer drop to the street below. His eyes widen. Sweat beads form on his brow. The policeman crawls back down the tiles towards him. Scotty looks up at the policeman, who's holding out an arm.
Give me your hand!
As the gutter bends under Scotty's weight, the policeman overbalances and falls. Still dangling from the gutter, horrified, Scotty looks down at the policeman lying on the street far below. He watches people running over to the body. He's in a cluttered artist's studio. A woman works at a drawing board. Scotty is balancing a walking stick on his finger. It falls.
Ouch! Ouch!
I thought you said no more aches or pain.
No, it's this darn corset. It binds.
No three-way stretch? Very unchic.
Yeah, You know, those police department doctors, no sense of style. Well, anyway, tomorrow will be the day.
Why, what's tomorrow?
Tomorrow. The corset comes off tomorrow. I'll be able to scratch myself like anybody else tomorrow. I'll throw this miserable thing out the window. Be a free man. Mitch, do you suppose many men wear corsets?
More than you think.
Really? Well, do you know that from personal experience, or?
Please. What happens after tomorrow?
What do you mean?
Well, what are you going to do? Why don't you quit the police force?
Well, you sound so disapproving, Mitch.
No, it's your life. It's you with a bright young lawyer that decided he was going to be chief of police someday.
I had to quit.
Why?
Well, it's because of this fear of heights I have, this acrophobia. I wake up at night seeing that man fall from the roof, and I try to reach out to it, and it's just...
It wasn't your fault.
I know, that's what everybody tells me.
Johnny, the doctors explained to you.
I know. I have acrophobia, which gives me vertigo, and I get dizzy. Boy, what a moment to find out I had it.
Well, you've got it, and there's no losing it. And there's no one to blame. So why quit?
You mean to sit behind a desk, chairborne?
Where you belong.
What about my acrophobia? What about... Now, suppose I'm sitting in this chair behind the desk. Here's the desk. And a pencil falls from the desk down to the floor, and I reach down to pick up the pencil. Bingo, my acrophobia is back.
Oh, Johnny, oh. Well, what do you do?
Well, I'm not going to do anything for a while. You know, don't forget, I'm a man of independent means, as the saying goes. Fairly independent.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't you go away for a while?
You mean to forget? Oh, now, Midge, don't be so motherly. I'm not going to crack up.
Have you had any dizzy spells this week?
I'm having one right now. Midge, the music, don't you think it's sort of,
She gets up. He points to a bra.
What's this doohickey?
It's a brassiere. You know about those things. You're a big boy now.
I've never run across one like that.
It's brand new. Revolutionary uplift. No shoulder straps, no back straps, but does everything a brassiere should do. Works on the principle of the cantilever bridge.
Does?
Mm-hmm. An aircraft engineer down the peninsula designed it. He worked it out in his spare time.
Kind of a hobby. Do-it-yourself type thing. How's your love life, Midge?
It's following a train of thought.
Well?
Normal.
Aren't you ever going to get married?
You know there's only one man in the world for me, Johnny O.
You mean me? We were engaged once, though, weren't we?
3 whole weeks.
Yeah, good old college days. But you were the one that called off the engagement, you remember? I'm still available. Available Ferguson. Oh, Midge, do you remember a fellow in college by the name of Gavin Elster?
Gavin Elster?
Yeah, it's a funny name.
You'd think I would. No.
I had a call from Gavin today. It's funny, he sort of dropped out of sight during the war. Somebody said he went east. I guess he's back. The mission number.
Well, that's Skid Row, isn't it?
That could be.
He's probably on the bum and wants to touch you for the price of a drink.
Well, I'm on the bum. I'll buy him a couple of drinks and tell him my troubles. But not tonight. How about you and me going out for beers?
Mm-mm. Sorry, old man. Work.
Well, then I think I'll go home.
Scotty pauses on his way to the door.
Midge, what did you mean there's no losing it?
What?
The acrophobia.
Well, I asked my doctor. He said that only another emotional shock could do it, and probably wouldn't. You're not going to go diving off another rooftop to find out.
I think I can lick it.
Wow.
Well, I have a theory. I think if I can get used to heights just a little bit at a time, just a little like that, progressively, you see, I'll show you what I mean. Here. Show you what I mean.
He takes a small stool.
I'll start with this.
That?
What do you want me to start with, the Golden Gate Bridge?
Now watch. What's this?
There we go. There. There. Now, I look up. I look down. I look up.
Oh,
there's
kidding.
Nothing to it.
Wait a minute.
There's nothing to it.
She fetches a chair with steps.
Here.
Oh, that's a girl. Oh, use that. Right there. All right, here's the first step. There.
Okay, now, step number two.
All right, step number two coming up.
He slowly takes the second step.
Now, see, I look up, I look down. I look up, I'm going right out and buy myself a nice tall stepladder.
And take it easy now.
All right, now here we go.
No problem.
He carefully climbs onto the yellow plastic chair.
Well, it's a cinch. Here, I look up, I look down. I look up, I look down.
Through the studio window, he catches sight of the street. Far below, he sways and faints, falling sideways into Midge's arms. She holds him tight, looking anxious. Scotty walks into a shipyard. A security man directs him to a luxurious wood-paneled office.
How did you get in the shipbuilding business, Gavin?
I married into it.
Very interesting business.
No, to be honest, I find it dull.
Well, you don't have to do it for a living.
No, but one assumes responsibilities. My wife's family is all gone. Someone has to look after her interests. Her father's partner runs the company yard in the East, Baltimore. So I decided, as long as I had to work at it, I'd come back here. I always liked it here.
How long have you been back?
Almost a year.
You like it, huh?
Well, San Francisco's changed. The things that spell San Francisco to me are disappearing fast.
Scotty points to a landscape painting on the wall.
Like all these?
Yes, I should have liked to have lived here then. Color, excitement, power, freedom. Shouldn't you be sitting down?
No, I'm all right.
I was sorry to read about that thing in the paper. And you've quit the force. Is it a permanent physical disability?
No. It just means that I can't climb stairs that are too steep or go to high places, like the bar at the top of the Mark. But there are plenty of street-level bars in this town.
Would you like a drink now?
No, I don't think so. No, it's a little early in the day for me. Well, I guess that just about covers everything, doesn't it? I never married. I don't see much of the old college gang. I'm a retired detective, and you're in the shipbuilding business. What's in your mind, Gavin?
I asked you to come up here, Scotty, knowing that you'd quit detective work. But I wondered whether you'd go back on the job as a special favor to me. I want you to follow my wife. No, it's not that. We're very happily married.
Well, then...
I'm afraid some harm may come to her.
From whom?
Someone dead.
Surprised, Scotty looks up at Gavin.
Scotty, do you believe that someone out of the past, someone dead, can enter and take possession of a living being?
No.
If I told you that I believe this has happened to my wife, what would you say?
Well, I'd say take her to the nearest psychiatrist, or psychologist, or neurologist, or or maybe just the plain family doctor. I'd have him check on you, too.
Then you're of no use to me. I'm sorry I wasted your time. Thanks for coming in, Scotty.
Okay. I didn't mean to be that rough.
No, it sounds idiotic, I know. And you're still the hard-headed Scott, aren't you? Always were. You think I'm making it up?
No.
I'm not making it up. I wouldn't know how. She'll be talking to me about something. Suddenly, the words fade into silence. A cloud comes into her eyes, and they go blank. She's somewhere else, away from me, someone I don't know. I call to her. She doesn't even hear me. Then, with a long sigh, she's back. Looks at me brightly. Doesn't even know she's been away. Can't tell me where or when.
Well, how often does this happen?
More and more in the past few weeks. And she wanders. God knows where she wanders. I followed her one day. Watched her coming out of the apartment. Someone I didn't know. She even walked a different way. Got into her car and drove out to Golden Gate Park. 5 miles. Sat by the lake, staring across the water at the pillars that stand on the far shore. You know, portals of the past. sat there a long time without moving. I had to leave, get back to the office. When I got home that evening, I asked her what she'd done all day. She said she'd driven out to Golden Gate Park and sat by the lake, that's all.
Well?
The speedometer on her car showed that she'd driven 94 miles. Where did she go? I've got to know, Scotty, where she goes and what she does before I get involved with doctors.
Well, have you talked to the doctors at all about that?
Yes, but carefully. I want to know more before committing her to that kind of care. Scotty.
All right, I'll get you a firm of private eyes to follow her for you. They're dependable, good boy.
I want you.
Look, this isn't my line.
Scotty, I need a friend. Someone I can trust. I'm in a panic about this.
I'm supposed to be retired. I don't want to get mixed up in this darn thing.
Look, we're going to an opening of the opera tonight. We're dining at Ernie's first. You can see her there.
Scotty looks reluctant.
Ernie's.
Nighttime. Stained glass panel doors. There's a brass plaque on the wall, Ernie's Restaurant. Inside, Scotty sits at the busy bar, looking around. The walls and carpet are crimson. There's a large arrangement of pink and white flowers. The restaurant's full of smartly dressed diners. In the opposite corner from the bar sit Gavin and his wife Madeleine, deep in conversation. She has platinum blonde hair swept up in a bun. She wears a black evening dress with a voluminous black and green satin wrap and long black gloves. Scotty watches the couple as Gavin signs the bill and Madeleine adjusts her wrap. Gavin pulls his wife's chair back for her to stand up. Scotty looks away as Gavin and Madeleine walk towards the bar. Gavin talks to the maitre d'. Madeleine walks towards the bar, smiling slightly. Scotty looks away. Madeleine looks over her shoulder. Gavin joins her. Scotty watches them leave the restaurant, passing a full-length gilt-framed mirror. Daytime. Scotty is wearing a trilby, parked in a white saloon car, reading the newspaper. He looks out of the driver's window at a huge, ornate apartment block with pillars either side of the drive. He returns to his newspaper briefly, then watches Madeleine leave the apartment block and walk over to a dark green Jaguar and get in. Scotty puts down the newspaper hurriedly. Madeleine drives out of the car park through the pillars. Scotty waits for her to drive past him, then pulls out and follows her. She turns left at a junction. He follows. She drives downhill along a busy street. She turns right. There's a yellow car between Madeleine and Scotty. Up ahead, she signals left. Scotty frowns. She drives slowly into a very narrow side street between two shops. Scotty looks over his shoulder and follows. She parks the Jag in the narrow street. Scotty stops and pokes his head out of the window. She gets out of her car and goes into a nondescript building. Scotty gets out of his car and walks down the empty street until he reaches her car. He pauses outside a plain door in a dingy brick wall. He goes in. It's dark. It looks like a storeroom. He goes over to a door on the opposite wall, looking over his shoulder. He opens the door. It leads to a large florist's shop with brightly coloured displays of flowers. Madeleine, in a grey suit, talks to an assistant. While the assistant goes away, she idly looks around, a dark fur stole draped over her arm. Scotty watches through a crack in the door as she wanders up and down the shop, looking at the displays. The assistant returns with a round pink posy, which Madeleine takes. Scotty leaves the door and goes back through the dark storeroom to the street entrance at a brisk walk. He heads back to his car and gets in. He watches Madeleine come out, holding the posy, and get into her car. She pulls away. He follows. She pulls up outside a white Spanish-style church. He parks a short distance behind her. He watches her enter the church through a side door. He follows, jogging up steps to the arched entrance in the white wall. Holding his trilby, he enters, looking around. He watches Madeleine leave by a door at the side of the altar, which has an ornate gold backdrop. He walks up the aisle to follow her. Putting his hat back on, he walks through a sunny, flower-filled graveyard. In the distance, Madeleine stands at a grave. Keeping his eyes on Madeleine, he walks through the gravestones, past trees, shrubs, and monuments. Hand in his trouser pocket, he tries to look casual as he looks at the headstones and statues. He hides behind a tree to observe her. She leaves the grave, he dodges behind a wall. Holding the posy, she stops and looks down. She leaves, walking back towards the church. Taking a notepad from his pocket and looking over his shoulder, he goes to the grave that Madeleine had visited. On the headstone, Carlota Valdez, born December 3rd, 1831, died March 5th, 1857. He copies it down, then hurries off. He is driving behind her Jaguar. She turns left. He follows. She is one car ahead. She parks by an imposing arch flanked by columns in white stone. He walks up towards the arch. Carrying his hat, he enters an art gallery. She is seated on a bench in front of a painting. He watches her from the shadows. He wanders around, pretending to look at the paintings. She is looking at a painting of a beautiful woman in a long dress. The posy is on the bench next to her. It's the same as the one held by the woman in the portrait. He notices the curl of Madeleine's bun. It is similar to the hair of the woman in the painting. The woman in the picture wears a gold and red pendant around her neck. Scotty turns away and leaves the gallery. He beckons the attendant.
Say, will you tell me something? That lady sitting in there, who's the woman in the painting she's looking at?
Oh, that's Carlotta. I find it in the catalog. Portrait of Carlotta.
May I have it?
Yes.
Thank you.
Scotty takes the catalog. Madeleine drives off, followed by Scotty. Madeleine parks. Scotty pulls over. He watches her go up steps to an imposing old building past a sign which reads McKittrick's Hotel. He leans over to watch her climb the stairs to the front door. Gets out of the car and follows, looking up at the large hotel. A palm tree stands in front of the huge windows. Scotty looks over his shoulder. He looks up at Madeleine, who appears at the window over the entrance, raising the blind and taking off her jacket. He goes up the sloping path to the steps that lead up to the entrance of the grey stone hotel. He enters. It's very gloomy, with a dark wood reception desk and grand staircase. It's deserted. A chandelier hangs over the stairs. He looks up at the ornate ceiling.
Yes?
An old lady appears at the desk. He approaches her.
Is there something I can do for you?
Yes, you run this hotel?
Oh, yes.
Oh, would you tell me who has the room on the second floor in the corner, that corner?
Oh, I'm afraid we couldn't give out information of that sort. But our clients are entitled to their privacy, you know. And I do believe it's against the law. Of course, I don't think any of them would mind, really, but still.
He shows her his badge.
Oh, dear, has she done something wrong?
Please answer my question.
I can't imagine that sweet girl with that dear face.
What's her name?
Valdez, Miss Valdez. Spanish, you know.
Carlotta Valdez?
Yeah, that's it. Sweet name, isn't it? Foreign, but sweet.
How long has she had the room?
Oh, it must be 2 weeks. Yeah, her rent's due tomorrow.
Does she sleep here ever?
No. She just comes to sit 2 or 3 times a week. I don't ask questions, you know, as long as they're well behaved. But I must say,
when she comes down, don't say that I've been here.
Oh, but she hasn't been here today.
I just saw her come in 5 minutes ago.
No, she hasn't been here at all. Well, I would have seen her, you know. I've been right here all the time putting olive oil on my rubber plant leaves. And there you see, her key is on the rack.
Well, would you please go up and look?
To her room?
That's right.
Yes, of course, if you ask. But it does seem silly.
Thank you.
She takes down the key from the board and goes upstairs. Scotty frowns and looks up at the chandelier.
Oh, Mr. Detective.
He goes to the foot of the stairs.
Would you like to come and look?
He jogs up the stairs to join the old lady on the landing. She opens the door for him. He goes in and looks around. The room is unoccupied. He looks out of the window. Madeline's car has gone.
Her car's gone.
What car?
Scotty looks puzzled. He drives up to the apartment block. The Jaguar is parked outside. He squints and looks at the posy resting on the dashboard. He enters Midge's studio. She's sitting on the windowsill, a panoramic view of the city behind her.
Midge, who do you know that's an authority on San Francisco history?
That's the kind of greeting a girl likes. Oh, this hello, you look wonderful stuff. Just a good, straight, who do you know that's an authority on San Francisco? No, thanks.
Well, who do you? You know everybody.
Professor Saunders over in Berkeley.
No, I don't mean that kind of history. I mean the small stuff, you know, people you never heard of.
Oh, well, you mean the gay old bohemian days of gay old San Francisco. Juicy stories like who shot who in the Embarcadero in August 1879.
Yeah, that's right.
Paul Pleble.
Oh?
Paul Pleble. He owns the Argosy Bookshop. Why, what do you want to know?
I want to know who shot who in the Embarcadero in August 1879.
Hey, wait a minute. You're not a detective anymore. What's going on?
You know him well?
Who?
Pop Lee.
Oh, sure.
Well, come on, let's go. I want you to introduce me. Get your hat.
I don't need a hat.
She jumps off the windowsill and grabs her coat.
Hey, Johnny, what's it all about?
Hey, wait a minute.
He slurps his drink and follows. They are inside the Argosy bookshop.
Hello, oh, yes, I remember. Carlotta. The beautiful Carlotta. The sad Carlotta.
Well, what does an old wooden house at the corner of Eddy and Gough Street have to do with Carlotta Baldish?
Oh, it was hers. It was built for her many years ago.
By whom?
No. The name I do not remember. A rich man. Powerful man. Cigarette, miss?
No, thanks.
It is not an unusual story. She came from somewhere small to the south of the city. Some say from a mission settlement. Young, yes, very young. And she was found dancing and singing in cabaret by that man. And he took her and built for her the great house in the Western Addition. And there was a child. Yes, that's it. The child. I cannot tell you exactly how much time passed or how much happiness there was, but then he threw her away. He had no other children. His wife had no children. So he kept the child and threw her away. You know, men could do that in those days. They had the power and the freedom. And she became the sad Carlotta. Alone in the great house, walking the streets alone, her clothes becoming old and patched and dirty. And the mad Carlotta. Stopping people in the street to ask, where is my child? Have you seen my child?
Poor thing.
And she died?
She died.
How?
By her own hand. There are many such stories.
Well, thank you very much.
You are welcome.
Appreciate it. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Hey, wait a minute. Goodbye, Pop. Thanks a lot.
They leave the bookshop.
Now then, Johnny, pay me.
For what?
Well, for bringing you here. Come on, tell.
There's nothing to tell.
You'll tell or you'll be back in that corset. Oh, come on, Johnny,
come on,
please.
On. Take you home.
It's dark. They pull up outside Midge's apartment block.
There we are.
You haven't told me everything.
No, I've told you enough.
Well, who's the guy and who's the wife?
Out. I've got things to do.
I know. The one that phoned. Your old college chum, Elster.
Midge, out, please. Out.
The idea is that the beautiful Mad Carlotta has come back from the dead and taken possession of Elster's wife. Oh, now, Johnny, really, come on.
Well, I'm not telling you what I think. I'm telling you what he thinks.
Well, what do you think?
Well, I...
Is she pretty?
Carlotta?
No, not Carlotta, Elster's wife.
Yes, I guess you'd consider that she would...
I think I'll go take a look at that portrait.
No,
goodbye.
Wait. Midge.
Goodbye.
Midge, you...
Scotty looks thoughtful. He picks up the catalogue and flicks through it to find the picture of Carlotta. He remembers Madeleine at Ernie's. He shows Gavin the catalogue in his club.
Doing well, Scotty. You're good at your job.
That's Carlotta Valdez.
Yes.
The things you didn't tell me.
I didn't know where she'd lead you.
You knew about this.
Oh, yeah. You notice the way she does her hair? You know, there's something else. My wife, Madeline, has several pieces of jewelry that belong to Carlotta. She inherited them. Never wore them. They were too old-fashioned. Until now. Now, when she's alone, she takes them out and looks at them. Handles them gently, curiously. Puts them on and stares at herself in the mirror. Then goes into that other world. It's someone else again.
Now, Carlotta Valdez was what? Your wife's grandmother?
Great-grandmother. Now, the child who was taken from her, whose loss drove Carlotta mad and to her death, is Madeline's grandmother. And the McKittrick Hotel is the old Valdez home.
Well, I think that explains it. Anyone could become obsessed with the past with a background like that.
She never heard of Carlotta Valdez.
She knows nothing of a grave out of the Mission Dolores or that old house on Eddy Street. The portrait at the Palace of the Legion.
Nothing.
Well, when she goes to these places...
She's no longer my wife.
Well, how do you know all these things she doesn't?
Her mother told me most of them before she died. I dug out the rest for myself here.
Well, why wouldn't she tell her daughter?
Natural fear. Her grandmother went insane, took her own life. Her blood is in Madeline.
Scotty picks up his drink.
Boy, I need this.
Scotty is driving behind Madeline round a sharp bend. She parks outside the art gallery. The evening sun casts long shadows over the gallery lawns. She goes in. Scotty walks up the path between the lawns. Holding his hat, he watches Madeleine sitting on the bench in front of the painting. He hides behind a pillar as she stands up and walks towards the picture. He backs into the shadows as she leaves. She drives off. He follows. She drives between two white columns into a wooded area. He follows. She drives through wire gates and down a road cut into the rock next to the ocean. Waves lap up against the retaining wall below the road. They pass a large cream-coloured house. She parks by a large brick-built fort underneath one end of the Golden Gate Bridge. Scotty pulls up and gets out. Madeline wanders over to the water's edge, looking out to sea. Her coat and scarf blowing in the wind, she disappears behind the corner of the fort. Scotty hurries towards her. She stands at the water's edge, pulling the posy to pieces and throwing the flowers into the sea. The flowers float on the inky black water. Scotty watches, intrigued. She drops the rest of the posy into the sea. Suddenly, she launches herself into the water. Scotty rushes over, pulling off his jacket and hat. He runs down steps to the water and dives in. She is floating, arms outstretched. He swims over to her and takes her in his arms, swimming back to the steps, buffeted by the waves. Taking her in his arms, he carries her up the steps. She lolls back in his arms. He opens her car door and puts her in the passenger seat.
Madeline. Madeline.
She opens her eyes briefly. It's dark. Her car is parked outside Scotty's apartment. He's throwing a log on the fire. He sits on the couch, drinking a cup of coffee. Her clothes are hanging up to dry in the kitchen. There is a drinks tray on a table nearby. She is in his bed. Scotty stands up and looks through the open bedroom door. He hurries over to the bedside phone.
Yes?
She wakes up.
No, it's all right. I'll call you back. Yes. Yes. You all right?
She looks at her naked shoulder.
Oh, you want this.
He offers her a red robe. She nods. He leaves the room, shutting the door behind him. He goes into the kitchen and fetches a cup and saucer and milk jug, putting them on the coffee table by the couch. She comes out of the bedroom in the robe. He watches her, admiringly.
You better come over here by the fire where it's warm.
She walks towards him, barefoot.
What am I doing here? What happened?
Well, you fell into San Francisco Bay. I tried to dry your hair as best I could. Your things are in the kitchen. They'll be dry in a few minutes. Come on over by the fire.
She steps forward uncertainly.
Here, I'll give you some cushions. There you are.
He throws two cushions onto the floor. She sits on them. He perches on the arm of the couch.
Like to have some coffee?
She shakes her head.
Well, here, you better have some, or perhaps you'd like a drink.
She shakes her head.
I fell into the bay and you fished me out.
That's right.
Thank you.
You don't remember?
No,
You remember where you were?
Yes. Yes, of course I remember that. Then I must have had a dizzy spell and fainted.
Where were you?
At Old Fort Point. Out of the Presidio. Of course I remember. I often go there.
Why? Why do you go there?
Because I love it so. It's beautiful there. Especially at sunset. Thank you for the fire.
Where were you before?
When?
This afternoon, I mean.
Wandering about?
I know, but where? Where were you just before?
Downtown shopping.
Here, you better have some coffee. I think it's still warm.
You're terribly direct in your questions.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be rude.
You're not. You're merely direct. And what were you doing there at Old Fort Point?
Oh, just wandering about.
Oh, you like it too?
Yes.
And where had you been just before?
I'd been to the Palace of the Legion of Honor, the art gallery.
Oh, yes. It's a lovely spot, isn't it? Never been inside, but it looks so lovely driving past.
He stares at her, frowning.
It's lucky for me you were wandering about. Thank you. I've been a terrible bother to you.
No, you haven't.
Oh, when you were...
She looks over at her clothes hanging up.
There were some pins in my hair.
Oh, the pins, yes, right in here. I'll get them for you.
And my purse, please.
He fetches her hairpins and bag from the kitchen.
Here you are.
Thank you. You shouldn't have brought me here, you know.
Well, I didn't know where you live.
You could have looked in my car. Oh, but then you didn't know my car, did you?
No, I knew which one it was. It's right outside here now, but I didn't think you wanted to be taken home that way.
No, you're right. I'm glad you didn't take me home. I wouldn't have known you. Thank you. But I don't know you, and you don't know me. My name is Madeline Astor.
My name's John Ferguson.
Good, strong name. Your friends call you John or Jack?
Oh, John, mostly. Old friends call me John. Acquaintances call me Scotty.
I shall call you Mr. Ferguson.
Oh, gee whiz, I wouldn't like that. Oh, no. And after what happened this afternoon, I should think maybe you'd call me Scotty. Maybe even John.
Well, I prefer John.
She pins up her hair.
Now, that's done. And what do you do, John?
Just wander about.
Well, that's a good occupation. And you live here alone? One shouldn't live alone.
Some people prefer it.
No, it's wrong. I married you now.
Sitting on the couch, he leans forward.
Will you tell me something? Has this ever happened to you before?
What?
Falling into San Francisco Bay.
Oh. No, it's never happened before. Oh, I've fallen into lakes out of rowboats when I was a little girl. I even fell into the river once, trying to leap from one stone to another. But I've never fallen into San Francisco Bay. Have you ever before?
No. It's the first time for me, too. Here, I'll get you some more coffee.
His hand rests on hers on the cup. He goes into the bedroom to answer the phone, closing the door behind him.
No, she's all right. She's still here. I'll bring her home soon.
What happened?
She went into the bay.
Hello? Hello? Did she hurt herself?
No, she's going to be in fine shape. There's nothing to worry about, but she doesn't know. Now, do you understand that? She doesn't know what happened.
Scotty, Madeline is 26. Carlotta Valdez committed suicide when she was 26.
Just hold on a minute, Gavin.
Scotty goes to the bedroom door and looks at the living room. It's empty. ¶¶ Her clothes have gone from the kitchen. The robe is on the counter. He goes back to the phone. She gets into her car. Mitch pulls up and sees Madeline driving away from Scotty's apartment. She smiles wryly.
Well now, Johnny-o, was it a ghost? Was it fun?
Scotty comes to the door looking out. Mitch drives off. Morning. From his car, Scotty watches Madeline leave her apartment block. The commissionaire salutes her. Wearing a white coat, she gets into her car and drives off past Scotty. He follows her. She turns right at a junction. He follows. She turns right again. Scotty frowns as he follows. She drives over the brow of a hill and turns left. She turns right, two cars ahead of Scotty. She pauses at a junction, turning right. She drives downhill. Scotty throws up his hands. She turns right. He frowns. She turns left. He looks exasperated. She turns left, then left again. She turns right. He looks confused. She parks the dark green Jag in front of his apartment and gets out, taking an envelope from her bag. He parks next to her. She goes up to his red front door and puts the note through his letterbox. Walks over to her.
Yes, hello.
Hello? I worried about you last night. You shouldn't have run off that way.
Well, I suddenly felt such a fool.
Well, I wanted to drive you home. Are you all right?
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm fine. No after effects. But as I remember now, the water was cold, wasn't it?
It sure was.
What a terrible thing for me to do. You were so kind. It's a formal thank you note and a great big apology.
Oh, you've nothing to apologize for.
Oh, yes, I do. The whole thing must have been so embarrassing for you.
Not at all. I enjoyed talking to you.
Well, I enjoy talking to you.
She smiles.
Well, I'll get my mail. You want to have a cup of coffee?
No, thank you.
She waits outside.
Oh, I couldn't mail it. I didn't know your address. But I had a landmark. I remembered Coit Tower. Let me straight to you.
Well, it's the first time I've been grateful for Coit Tower.
He reads her note.
I hope we will, too.
What?
Meet again sometime.
We have.
She leaves, hurrying over to her car. He follows her, still holding the note, and leans towards the car window.
Where are you going?
Oh, I don't know.
Shopping?
No.
Well, anywhere in particular?
No, I just thought that I'd wander.
Oh, that's what I was going to do.
Oh, yes, that's right, I forgot. It's your occupation, isn't it?
Yeah, well, don't you think it's kind of a waste for the two of us
to wander separately?
Uh-huh.
Only one is a wanderer. The two together are always going somewhere.
No, I don't think that's necessarily true.
He left your door open.
Be right back.
He hurries back to the apartment. They drive on a mountain road. He looks across at her. Driving, she stares straight ahead. The car is parked by a dark wood. They wander amongst the enormous trees.
Old?
Oh, some 2,000 years or more.
The oldest living things.
Yes. You've never been here before?
No.
What do you think?
All the people who've been born and have died while the trees were not living?
Their true name is Sequoia sempervirens. Always green, ever living.
I don't like them.
Why?
I have to die.
They meander through the dappled shade. He places his hand on her back.
There's a cross section of one of the old trees that's been cut down.
They study the signs on the cross section of trunk. In the middle, 909 AD. Then 1066, Battle of Hastings, 1215, Magna Carta signed, 1492, Discovery of America, 1776, Declaration of Independence, 1930, tree cut down. She touches the tree.
Somewhere in here I was born, and there I died. It was only a moment for you. You took no notice.
She wanders off with a blank expression.
Madeline.
He watches her walk slowly behind a huge tree, out of sight. With a troubled expression, he cranes to look behind the tree. He follows her, looking around. She is leaning with her back to a tree, her eyes shut.
Madeline. Madeline, where are you now?
Here with you.
Where?
Those trees.
Have you been here before?
Yes.
When? When were you born?
Long ago.
Where? When? Tell me. Madeline, tell me.
No.
Madeline, tell me what it is. Where do you go?
No,
what
I can't
takes you away?
You.
When you jumped into the bay, you didn't know where you were. You gasped, but you
didn't
know.
I didn't jump. I fell. You
Why
told
did
me
you
I
jump?
Fell.
Why did you jump?
No, I can't tell you.
Why did you jump? What was there inside that told
no,
you to jump?
Please.
What? What?
Please don't ask me. Please don't ask me. Take me away from here.
Shall I take you home?
Somewhere in the light. Promise me something. Promise you won't ask me again. Please promise me that.
He takes her hand and leads her out of the wood. She walks towards a rocky, windswept shoreline. Scotty gets out of her car looking concerned and hurries over to her, standing by a misshapen tree.
Why did you run?
I'm responsible for you now. You know, the Chinese say that once you've saved a person's life, you're responsible for it forever. So I'm committed. I have to know.
So little that I know.
She looks out to sea.
It's as though I were walking down a long corridor that once was mirrored.
The fragments of that mirror still hang there. And when I come to the end of the corridor, there's nothing but darkness. And I know that when I walk into the darkness, that I'll die. But I've never come to the end. I've always come back before then. Except once.
Yesterday. And you didn't know. You didn't know what happened until you found yourself with me. You didn't know where you were. The small scenes, the fragments of the mirror, you remember those?
Vaguely.
What do you remember?
There's a room. And I sit there alone. Always alone.
What else?
Grave.
Where?
I don't know. It's an open grave, and I stand by the gravestone looking down into it. It's my grave.
But how do you know?
I know.
But is there a name on the gravestone?
No. No, it's new and clean and waiting.
What else?
It's part his dream, I think. There's a tower and a bell in a garden below. It seems to be in Spain. Village in Spain. It clicks off and it's gone.
Portrait. Do you see a portrait?
No.
If I could just find the key, the beginning, and put it together.
So explain it away. There is a way to explain it, you see. If I'm mad, then that would explain it, wouldn't it?
She dashes down the rocks towards the sea.
Madeline!
He follows her, catches up, and takes her in his arms.
I'm not mad. I don't want to die. There's someone within me, and she says I must die. Oh, Scotty, don't let me go.
I'm here. I've got you.
I'm so afraid.
As the waves crash on the rocks below, they kiss passionately. Nighttime. Midge laughs as she paints at an easel in her studio. She hurriedly puts down her palette and hides the gallery catalogue under a cushion.
Hi, Johnny.
Hi.
Did you get my message?
I did indeed.
I'll get you a drink.
Okay. Since when do you go around slipping notes under men's doors?
Since I stopped being able to get them on the phone. For a man who has nothing to do, you're certainly a busy little bee. Where do you go these days?
Just wandering.
Where?
Roundabout.
Oh.
What was this desperate urge to see me?
All I said in my note was, where are you? Doesn't sound very desperate to me.
I detected a little undercurrent.
I just thought that if I gave you a drink and fed you some dinner, you'd be so grateful you'd take me to a movie.
Well, that's fair enough. What do we talk about at dinner?
Oh, this and that.
What I've been doing?
Well, if you want to. Naturally, we won't talk about anything you don't want to talk about.
Naturally.
What have you been doing?
Wandering.
She hands him a drink.
What have you been doing?
Thank you, dear.
Oh, I've been having a wonderful time. I've gone back to my first love, painting.
Well, good for you. I always said you were wasting your time in the underwear department.
Well, that's a living. But I'm really excited about this.
What is it? Still life?
No, not exactly. You want to see?
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I thought I might give it to you.
Oh. It's a copy of the portrait of Carlotta, but with Midge's bespectacled face. He studies it, looking stern, then shakes his head.
Johnny.
No, that's not funny, Midge.
Johnny?
No.
Johnny, I just thought...
No. Let's make that movie some other night.
He puts on his hat and leaves. Midge watches, distraught. She stands up.
Johnny?
She pulls at her hair, crying.
Oh, Marjorie, what you fool! Idiot!
She picks up a brush and daubs the portrait, then throws the brush away. She holds her blonde hair away from her face.
Stupid, stupid, stupid!
He wanders around the city at night. He wakes up in his clothes on his couch. Rubbing his face, he gets up. He opens the front door.
What's the matter?
I should have phoned you, but I wanted to see you and be with you.
Why? What's happened?
I had the dream. Dream came back again.
Be all right. It'll be all right. Here, I'll get some brandy. Just like this now. Just like medicine. It was a dream. You're awake. You're all right now. Now, can you tell me?
It was the tower again and the bell in the old Spanish village.
Yes?
Clear, so very clear for the first time. All of it.
Tell me.
There was a village square and a green with trees and an old whitewashed Spanish church with a cloister. Across the green, there was a big grey wooden house with a porch and shutters and a balcony above. A small garden and next to it a livery stable with old carriages lined up inside.
Go on.
At the end of the green, there was a whitewashed stone house with a lovely pepper tree at the corner.
And an old wooden hotel from the old California days? And a saloon? Dark, low ceilings with hanging oil lamps?
Yes.
It's all there. It's no dream. You've been there before. You've seen it.
She sits down.
No, never.
Madeline, 100 miles south of San Francisco, there's an old Spanish mission. San Juan Bautista, it's called, and it's been preserved exactly as it was 100 years ago as a museum. Now, think hard, darling. Think hard. You've been there before. You've seen it.
I've never been there. Oh, Scotty, what is it? I've never been there.
Think hard. Now go on about your dream. What was it that frightened you so?
I stood alone on the green, searching for something. And then I started to walk to the church. Then the darkness closed in, and I was alone in the dark. Being pulled into the darkness. I fought to wake up.
Well, you're going to be all right now, Madeline. Don't you see you've given me something to work on now? I'm going to take you down there to that mission this afternoon, and when you see it, you'll remember when you saw it before, and it'll finish your dream. It'll destroy it, I promise you. All right? Come on, then, I'll take you home.
No, I'll be all right.
You come back here around noon.
She nods. He shows her out. They drive out through the sunny countryside. Scotty is at the wheel. They drive through tall trees. Madeline looks up at them. She looks over at Scotty, smiling. He turns and smiles back. They turn left by a sign pointing to the mission. Sun shines into a cloister, casting deep shadows. A nun walks across a grassy area in front of the cloisters. The Jag is parked on the other side of the lawn. A sign on a white building says Livery Stable. Scotty and Madeline are inside. She sits in a carriage.
And it's all real. It's not merely as it was 100 years ago, or a year ago, or 6 months ago, or whenever it was you were here to see it.
Now, Madeline, think of when you were here.
There were not so many carriages then. There were horses in the stalls. Bay, two black and a gray. It was our favorite place. But we were forbidden to play here. And Sister Teresa would scold us.
Scotty walks over to a model horse.
Look at this. Here's your gray horse. Have a little trouble getting in and out of a stall without being pushed, but even so. You see, there's an answer for everything.
She stares out at the church opposite.
Madeline, try.
She stares blankly ahead.
Try for me.
She gets down from the carriage, still staring. They kiss. She looks out of the side of her eyes at the church.
I love you, Madeline.
I love you too. Too late.
No, no, we're together.
Well, it's too late. Something I must do.
No, there's nothing you must do. There's nothing you must do. No one possesses you. You're safe with me.
He kisses her. She pushes him away.
No, it's too late.
She rushes out of the livery stable, striding across the lawn. He follows and grabs her by the arms.
Look, it's not fair. It's too late. It wasn't supposed to happen this way. It shouldn't have happened.
But it had to happen. We're in love. That's all that counts.
Look, let me go, please.
Now, listen
let me
to
go.
Me. Listen to me.
He grips her by the arms. She looks up at him.
You believe I love you?
Yes.
And if you lose me, then you'll know I loved you and I wanted to go on loving you.
I won't lose you.
Let me go into the church. Alone.
Why?
She kisses him. She turns and leaves. She looks up at the church, then runs in. Scotty notices the bell tower.
Madeline!
She lets herself into the church.
Madeline!
He runs after her. He looks around the dark, empty church and notices a wooden staircase.
Madeline!
He runs over in time to see Madeline climb the stairs. He follows. He hesitates, looking down through the middle of the stairs at the floor far below. He starts to climb again. He stops and looks down, then up. He continues climbing, gaining on Madeline, who is just ahead. He watches her climb through a trap door to the bell. He turns and sees her body flying past the window next to him. He looks out at her body, lying on the terracotta-tiled roof below. Sweating and shaking, he shuts his eyes. He looks out of the window as two nuns walk down a path. Shaking, he wipes his mouth with the back of his hand. Unsteady, he starts to go down the stairs, clinging to the handrail. And a workman climb up a ladder to get onto the roof to reach Madeline. The priest blesses the body. Several vehicles, including police cars, are parked outside the building next door to the livery stable at the mission.
Ferguson. Mr. Alistair, suspecting that all was not well with his wife's mental state, took the preliminary precaution of having her watched by Mr. Ferguson, lest any harm befall her. And you have heard that Mr. Alistair was prepared to take his wife to an institution where her mental health would have been in the hands of qualified specialists. Mr. Ferguson, being an ex-detective, would have seemed the proper choice for the role of watchdog and protector. As you have learned, it was an unfortunate choice. However, I think you'll agree that no blame can be attached to the husband. His delay in putting his wife under medical care was due only to the need for information as to her behavior, which he expected to get from Mr. Ferguson. He had taken every precaution to protect his wife. He could not have anticipated that Mr. Ferguson's weakness, his fear of heights, would make him powerless when he was most needed. As to Mr. Ferguson, you have heard his former superior, Detective Captain Hansen, from that great city to the north, testify as to his character and ability. Captain Hansen was most enthusiastic. The fact that once before, under similar circumstances, Mr. Ferguson allowed a police colleague to fall to his death, Captain Hansen dismissed as an unfortunate incident. Of course, Mr. Ferguson is to be congratulated on having once saved the woman's life when, in a previous fit of aberration, she threw herself into the bay. It is a pity that, knowing her suicidal tendencies, he did not make a greater effort the second time.
The coroner looks at Scotty.
But we are not here to pass judgment on Mr. Ferguson's lack of initiative. He did nothing. The law has little to say on the subject of things left undone. Nor does his strange behavior, after he saw the body fall, have any bearing on your verdict. He did not remain at the scene of the death, he left. He claims he suffered a mental blackout and knew nothing more until he found himself back in his own apartment in San Francisco several hours later. You may accept that or not. Or you may believe that having once again allowed someone to die, he could not face the tragic result of his own weakness and ran away. That has nothing to do with your verdict. It is a matter between him and his own conscience. Now, from the evidence of the state of mind of Madeline Elster prior to her death, from the manner of her death, and from the post-mortem examination of the body showing the actual cause of her death, you should have no difficulty in reaching your verdict, gentlemen. You may retire if you wish.
The jury of seven stand up, confer in a huddle, then sit down. Scotty watches nervously. The foreman writes on a document. Scotty looks anxious. The foreman stands.
We've reached a verdict.
Thank you.
The foreman hands the coroner the document.
The jury finds that Madeline Elster committed suicide while of unsound mind. Her verdict will be so recorded, dismissed.
Gavin approaches Scotty as his old police boss turns to him.
All right, Scotty, let's go. Do you mind if I speak to him for a minute?
Oh, go ahead.
Scotty.
Gavin and Scotty go over to the window.
Sorry, Scotty, that was rough. You had no right to speak to you like that. It was my responsibility. I shouldn't have got you involved. No, there's nothing you have to say to me. I'm getting out, Scotty, for good. I can't stay here. I'm going to wind up her affairs and mine. Get away as far as I can. Europe, perhaps. I probably never will come back. Goodbye, Scotty.
Scotty ignores his hand.
Is there anything I can do for you before I go? There was no way for them to understand. You and I know who killed Madeline.
Gavin leaves. Scotty's old boss approaches.
Come on, Scotty, let's get out of here.
They leave the empty courtroom. Scotty wanders through the sunny graveyard. He stands, head bowed, hands clasped behind his back, at Madeline's grave. Nighttime. Scotty is asleep in bed. He stirs restlessly. The picture flashes blue. He frowns, then opens his eyes wide. He imagines the posy of flowers. It becomes a cartoon and explodes into a riot of changing colours. He imagines Carlotta held by Gavin standing next to him in the courthouse looking up at him. He focuses on the red and gold pendant. Under a red flashing light, he dreams that he's walking along, head on one side. The graveyard is behind him. He looks down into an empty grave. His disembodied head turns green in front of a red and blue abstract background. In silhouette, he falls towards the mission roof. Then the background turns white. He sits up in bed, wide-eyed, terrified. Two nurses jog up steps to a hospital. Midge's car is parked outside. Scotty sits in an armchair next to a bed. Midge stands by a record player.
Mozart. Wolfgang Amadeus. I had a long talk with a lady in musical therapy, Johnny, and she says that Mozart's the boy for you. The broom that sweeps the cobwebs away.
Scotty looks up at Midge blankly.
Well, it's what the lady said. You know, it's wonderful how they have it all taped now, John. I have music for dipsomaniacs, and music for melancholiacs, and music for hypochondriacs. I wonder what would happen if somebody got their files mixed up.
She looks concerned, biting her lip.
I brought a lot of other things. You can see what you like. It shuts off automatically.
He ignores her. She kneels beside him.
Oh, Johnny. Johnny, please try. Try, Johnny. You're not lost. Mother's here.
A nurse nods from the doorway.
Time? Okay. I'll be in again, John. You want me to shut that off?
He stares at her blankly. She stands up and goes over to the record player. She turns to face him, then walks around the back of his chair, touching his shoulder with a finger.
Oh, John, oh, you don't even know I'm here, do you?
She bends over and kisses his ear.
But I'm here.
She straightens up and leaves. She walks down the corridor briskly, putting on her coat. She stops outside a door.
Nurse, could I see the doctor for a moment?
Doctor, Miss Wood. Won't you go in, please?
Yes, Miss Wood.
Doctor, how long is it going to take you to pull him out of this?
Well, it's hard to say. At least 6 months, perhaps a year. It really could depend on him.
He won't talk.
No. He's suffering from acute melancholia, together with a guilt complex. He blames himself for what happened to the woman. We know little of what went on before.
Well, I can give you one thing. He was in love with her.
Oh, that does complicate the problem, doesn't it?
I can give you another complication. He still is. You want to know something, Doctor? I don't think Mozart's going to help at all.
Midge bows her head tearfully and leaves, walking slowly down the corridor, pausing by the window at the end. A panoramic view over San Francisco in the sunshine, the bay in the distance. A clear blue sky over Madeline's apartment block. The Jag is parked outside. With an anguished expression, Scotty stands nearby. He watches a blonde woman in a white coat leave the building. The commissionaire salutes her. Scotty hurries forward towards the car. The woman approaches.
You get this car.
I beg your pardon. This car. Why, I bought it from a man who used to live here in this apartment building, Mr. Gavin Elster. I bought it from him when he moved away. Oh, you knew him. And his wife, the poor thing. I didn't know her. Tell me, is it true that she really...
I'm sorry.
He tips his hat and leaves. Nighttime. He stands outside Ernie's restaurant. He enters through the swing doors. Head bowed, hands in pockets, he walks up to the bar.
Good evening.
Good evening.
He sits at the bar, looking at the diners, while the barman waits for his order. A blonde woman, similar to Madeline, leaves her table and walks towards him. He stares at her, open-mouthed. She emerges into the bar with her escort. Scotty shuts his eyes and swallows and turns towards the bar.
Scotch and soda.
He stands in the art gallery, watching a woman in a grey suit like Madeline's, sitting on the bench in front of Carlotta's portrait, referring to the catalogue. He walks over to her. The young woman with brown hair in a bun looks up at him. The posy from the portrait is on display in a shop window. Scotty stares at it. He looks away from the shop window and notices a girl in green walking down the street with three girlfriends. He stares at her. She stops to chat with her companions. She has collar-length brown hair, but looks like Madeline. He watches her leave her friends and follows her down a busy street. From across the street, he watches her enter the Empire Hotel. He looks up at the tall hotel, which has a fire escape on the front and a red and white vertical sign. The girl in green opens a top floor window. He looks up. Looking around uncertainly, he crosses the road to the hotel and goes in. He pauses at the end of a dingy corridor. He slowly walks down a brown patterned carpet, looking over his shoulder hesitantly. He pauses outside a door. The girl in green, wearing a lot of makeup, opens the door.
Well, what is it?
Could I ask you a couple of questions?
What for? Who are you?
My name's John Ferguson.
Is this some kind of gallipole?
Oh, no. There are just a couple of things I'd like to ask.
You live in this hotel?
No, I happened to see you when you came in, so I thought I'd...
Yeah, I thought so. A pickup. Well, you've got a nerve. Follow me right into the hotel and up to my room. Now, you beat it. Go on and beat it.
Please, I just want to talk to you.
Listen, I'm going to yell in a minute.
I'm not going to hurt you, honest, I promise. Please. Just let me talk to you.
What about?
You.
Why?
Because you remind me of somebody.
I heard that one before, too. I remind you of someone you used to be madly in love with, but then she ditched you for another guy, and you've been carrying the torch ever since. Then you saw me and something clicked.
Well, you're not far wrong.
Well, it's not gonna work, so you better go.
Please, let me come in. You can leave the door open. I just want to talk to you. Please.
Well, I warn you, I can yell awful loud.
Well, you won't have to.
Well, you don't look very much like Jack the Ripper. What do you want to know?
I want to know your name.
Judy Barton.
Who you are?
I'm just a girl. I work at Magnin's.
No, but how do you happen to be living here?
It's a place to live, that's all.
No, but you haven't lived here long.
Yeah, about 3 years.
Where did you live before?
Salina, Kansas. Listen, what is this? What do you want?
I just want to know who you are.
Well, I told you. My name is Judy Barton. I come from Salina, Kansas. I work at Magnin's and I live here. My gosh, do I have to prove it?
She goes over to her bag on the dressing table.
All right, mister, my Kansas driver's license. Judy Barton, number Z296794, 425 Maple Avenue, Salina, Kansas. See the address on this one? It's this place right here. A California license issued May 25th of 1954. You want to check my thumbprints? You're satisfied? And whether you're satisfied or not, you can just beat it.
Facing the mirror, she looks at his reflection.
Gee, you have got it bad, haven't you? Do I really look like her?
She turns to face him. He nods solemnly.
She's dead, isn't she?
She looks away awkwardly.
I'm sorry. And I'm sorry I yelled at you.
He touches a framed photo on the dressing table.
Yes, that's me with my mother. And that's my father. He's dead. My mother married again. But I didn't like the guy, so I decided I'd see what it's like in sunny California. I've been here 3 years. Honest.
He starts to leave, but pauses in the doorway, looking over his shoulder as he grips the door handle.
Will you have dinner with me?
Why?
Well, I just feel that I owe you something after all this.
No, you don't owe me anything.
Well, then will you, for me?
Dinner and what else?
Just dinner.
Because I remind you of her?
Because I'd like to have dinner with you.
Well, I've been on blind dates before. Matter of fact, to be honest, I've been picked up before. Okay.
All right, I'll get my car. I'll be back for you in half an hour.
Oh, no, you better give me time to change and get fixed up.
An hour.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
He leaves. She stares at the door, then turns, looking worried. She remembers the bell tower, running into the church, pursued by Scotty, the wooden stairs, Scotty looking up as she ran up the steps. She recalls how she climbed through the trapdoor by the bell, that Gavin stood by the arched opening holding the lifeless body of a blonde woman in an identical grey suit. He tosses the body out of the arch and clamps his hand over Madeline's mouth, backing her away from the stairs. She closes her eyes at the memory. She goes to the cupboard and takes out a brown leather suitcase, putting it on the bed. She goes back to the cupboard and takes out some dresses on hangers. She looks at the grey suit hanging on the rail, running her hand down the sleeve. She puts the dresses on the bed next to the suitcase, looking back at the cupboard. She goes over to a desk and sits down, taking a sheet of paper from the drawer. She picks a pen from a mug and starts to write.
Dearest Scotty, and so you found me. This is the moment that I dreaded and hoped for, wondering what I would say and do if I ever saw you again. I wanted so to see you again just once. Now I'll go and you can give up your search. I want you to have peace of mind. You've nothing to blame yourself for. You were the victim. I was the tool, and you were the victim of Gavin Elster's plan to murder his wife. He chose me to play the part because I looked like her, dressed me up like her. He was quite safe because she lived in the country and rarely came to town. Chose you to be the witness to a suicide. The Carlotta story was part real, part invented to make you testify that Madeline wanted to kill herself. He knew of your illness. He knew you'd never get up the stairs of the tower. He planned it so well. He made no mistakes. I made the mistake. I fell in love. That wasn't part of the plan. I'm still in love with you, and I want you so to love me. If I had the nerve, I'd stay and lie, hoping that I could make you love me again, as I am for myself. And so forget the other and forget the past. But I don't know whether I have the nerve to try.
She stares into the distance. She stands up, holding the letter. She folds it and tears it up. She goes back to the bed, picks up the dresses and the suitcase, and puts them back in the cupboard. She takes out the grey suit, looks at it, then shoves it to the back of the cupboard out of sight. She takes out a lilac dress and cardigan, clasping it to her chest, looking thoughtful. Ernie's restaurant, full of diners. She sits opposite Scotty, wearing her lilac dress, drinking wine. Scotty looks over at the entrance. A blonde woman with hair in a bun, wearing a grey suit, arrives. He looks down, embarrassed. Madeline looks at the elegant woman, taking her seat. Madeline stares at Scotty, then looks down. Nighttime. The sign outside the Empire Hotel is lit up green. Scotty pulls up outside the hotel entrance. Madeline gets out of the car, followed by Scotty. He takes her arm. They walk together down the corridor. She fumbles with her door key.
Thanks again. Good night.
Can I see you tomorrow?
Tomorrow night? Well...
No, I mean tomorrow morning.
But I have to go to work. I've got a job.
Don't go to your job.
And what'll I live on? My oil wells in Texas?
Let me take care of you, Judy.
Thanks very much, but no thanks.
No, Judy, you don't understand.
Well, I understand, all right. I've been understanding since I was 17. And the next step is?
No.
And what?
We could just see a lot of each other.
Why? Does that remind you of her?
Silhouetted, she sits by the window, green from the neon sign outside.
Not very complimentary. And nothing else?
No.
It's not very complimentary either.
I just want to be with you as much as I can, Judy.
In the green light, she looks out of the window as if thinking it over.
Well, I guess I could phone the store in the morning and make some excuse.
Scotty leaves. Together by a lake in the morning sunshine. They pause by a large domed monument in the middle of the lake, then look across at the other side of the water, where there's a honey-coloured stone building with rows of columns. White birds fly across the lake. They walk past a couple lying on the grass kissing. In her lilac dress, Madeline dances with Scotty under a crystal chandelier. He looks serious as she rests her cheek on his chest. Daytime. They walk up to a flower stall on a busy street. She points to a white corsage.
I like that.
That?
Yes.
Oh, that's very nice.
Beautiful.
There we are. Now we get this, and then we'll buy you those clothes.
Honest?
I don't want your ransom, Mark. It's a bet.
That'll be 50 cents. Thank you.
I want to.
Taking her arm, he guides her across the street to a department store, Ranshoff's. Inside, they sit watching a girl model a grey suit, while two assistants stand nearby. Scotty shakes his head.
No, that's not it. Nothing like it.
But you said gray, sir.
Now, look, I just want an ordinary, simple gray suit.
But I like that one, Scotty.
No, it's not right.
Gentleman seems to know what he wants. All right, we'll find it.
The two assistants confer, then one leaves with a model.
Scotty, what are you doing?
I'm trying to buy you a suit.
I love the second one she wore. And this one, it's beautiful.
No, they're none of them right.
Oh, I think I know the suit you mean. We had it some time ago. Let me go and see. We may still have that model.
Thank you.
You're looking for the suit that she wore for me. You want me to be dressed like her.
Judy, I just want you to look nice. I know the kind of a suit that'll look well on you.
No, I won't do it.
She gets up and sulkily goes to the corner of the room. Scotty follows.
Judy, it can't make that much difference to you. I just want to see what you
look. No, I don't want any clothes. I don't want anything. I want to get out of here.
Judy, do this for me.
Here we are.
Yes, that's it.
I thought so.
I don't like it.
No, we'll take it. Will the thing fit?
Well, yes, it might need some slight alterations, but it's Madame's size. All right, dear. We'll have it for you to try on in a moment.
How long will the alterations take?
Well,
may we have it by tonight?
Well, if it's absolutely necessary.
Yes, it is. Now, we'd like to look at a dinner dress, an evening dress, short, black, with long sleeves and a kind of a square neck.
Scotty,
I certainly do know what you want, sir. I'll see what we have.
In the shoe department, Madeline walks up and down in black stilettos, watched by Scotty.
All right, that's it. Do you have them in brown?
Yes, we have. Fine.
Madeline sits down grumpily. In his apartment, she sits at his desk, head resting on her arms.
Here, Judy, drink this straight down. Suck medicine.
Why are you doing this? What good will it do?
I don't know. I don't know. No good, I guess. I don't know.
He looks out of the window.
I wish you'd leave me alone. I want to go away.
You can, you know.
He looks at her over his shoulder.
No, you wouldn't let me. I don't want to go.
Judy, I tell you this. These past few days have been the first happy days I've known in a year.
I know, because I remind you of her.
not even that very much.
No. No, Judy. Judy, it's you, too. There's something in you that...
He takes her face in his hands, then pulls away.
You don't even want to touch me.
Yes, yes, I do.
Couldn't you like me? Just me the way I am? When we first started out, it was so good. We had fun. And then you started in on the clothes. Well, I'll wear the darn clothes if you want me to, if you'll just like me.
He stares at her.
Color of your hair.
Oh, no.
She storms over to the window, turning her back on him.
Judy, please, it can't matter to you.
Crying, she turns to look at him.
If I let you change me, will that do it? I do what you tell me. Will you love me?
Yes. Yes.
All right. Then I'll do it. They don't care anymore about me.
He strokes her cheek, then kisses her. He ushers her towards the fireplace, picking up a cushion and tossing it on the floor for her to sit on, as she had done before. He sits on the arm of the couch while she settles in front of the fire. Scotty waits at a lady's hairdresser's.
I'm afraid it's going to take several hours. The young lady thought perhaps you'd like to go home, and then she'll come there as soon as she's finished.
Well, no, you tell her I'll go to her hotel and wait for her there. Oh, and you're sure about the color of the hair?
Oh, yes, it's an easy color.
And all the rest of the...
Yes, sir, we know what you want.
Thank you.
Eyeshadow is applied to Madeline's eyes. Red lipstick is wiped off her mouth. Bleach is rinsed off her hair. Her nails are painted with clear varnish. Scotty leans on the dressing table in her hotel room, reading the paper. He folds the paper and goes over to the window to look out. Tapping the paper on his hand, he returns to the dressing table and throws it down. He puts the lid on a box of tissues, then leans on the dressing table in front of the mirror. He goes back to the window and looks out, squinting. He frowns, goes over to the door, and opens it. He looks down the gloomy, empty corridor. He leans on the door frame. Madeline appears at the end of the corridor. She walks towards him wearing the grey suit with platinum blonde collar-length hair. He stares at her. She hesitates, then walks past him into her room, putting her handbag down on the dressing table.
Well?
I should be back from your face and pinned at the neck. I told her that. I told you that.
We tried it. It just didn't seem to suit me.
He reaches out to touch her hair. She flinches.
Please, Judy.
She stares at him defiantly, then looks down. She slowly goes into the bathroom. With an anxious expression, Scotty goes over to the window, looking around, agitated. He turns and watches the bathroom door. He turns away towards the window and sits on the arm of the chair. He turns his head slightly. He stands up slowly and stares at Madeline. She appears as if in a mist in the bathroom doorway with her hair pinned up. Looking serious, she slowly walks towards him out of the mist. He swallows. She smiles slightly and steps closer to him, her lips trembling. His bright blue eyes are teary as he steps forward, cups her face with his hands, and kisses her. They embrace. She holds him tightly. He looks troubled as the room disappears and the background becomes the livery stable. They kiss passionately. The hotel room reappears. He rests his cheek on hers, then kisses her on the lips again. Head tilts back, the background turns blue.
Where should we go for dinner?
Anywhere you like.
Ernie's?
You have a thing about Ernie's, don't you?
Well, after all, it's our place.
She comes out of the bathroom wearing a tight-fitting black dress.
Hello, my love. Like me?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the best you can do?
Come here.
Oh, no. You'll muss me.
Well, that's what I had in mind. Oh, come here.
Too late, I got my face on. And I'm suddenly hungry. Would you rather go somewhere else?
No, Ernie's fine.
I'm gonna have one of those big, beautiful steaks. Let me see. To start, I think I'll...
She puts on a necklace.
Help me with this, will you?
He gets up and stands behind her.
I have it. Well, how do you work this thing?
Can't you see?
Oh, there you are.
Thank you. I'm just about ready. All I've got to do is find my lipstick. Where do I put it? I had it a minute ago.
Scotty realizes the necklace is the red and gold pendant that Carlotta wore in the portrait that Madeline used to sit in front of at the art gallery.
What if it's here? Here it is. There, I'm ready. Muss me a little.
She embraces him.
Scotty, I do have you now, don't I?
How would you like to go someplace out of town for dinner? Maybe we could drive down the peninsula.
All right, if you like.
They kiss. It's dark. They drive down an empty road. Madeline, shifting awkwardly, looks across at Scotty.
We're going awfully far.
Well, I just feel like driving. You terribly hungry?
No. That's all right.
She stares ahead. Tall trees line the road. She looks up at the night sky between the trees as she did before. She looks uncomfortable.
Where are you going?
He looks at her out of the side of his eyes and smiles.
One final thing I have to do.
She gives him a sideways look.
And then I'll be free of the past.
Uneasy, she slowly turns to look at him. She stares ahead. They arrive at the Spanish mission, driving past the cloisters.
are we here?
I told you.
He gets out of the car.
I have to go back into the past once more. Just once more. For the last time.
Why? Why here?
Madeline died here, Judy.
I don't want to go. I'd rather wait here.
Oh, I need you.
Why?
I need you to be Madeline for a while. And when it's done, we'll both be free.
I'm scared.
Oh, no, I have to tell you about Madeline now. Right there. We stood there and I kissed her for the last time. And she said, if you lose me, you'll know that I loved you and wanted to keep on loving you. And I said, I won't lose you. But I did. And then she turned.
He looks at the tower.
And ran into the church.
Gripping her arms, he steers her towards the church. She tries to escape his grasp, but fails.
And when I followed her, it was too late.
He forces her towards the church door.
I don't want to go in there.
It's too late.
He pushes her through the door.
What's the matter?
I couldn't find her. And then I heard footsteps on the stairs. She was running up the tower. Right here.
Spike.
See, she was running up the stairs. Through the trap door at the top of the tower. I tried to follow her, but I couldn't get to the top. I tried, but I couldn't get to the top. One doesn't often get a second chance. I want to stop being haunted. You're my second chance, Judy. You're my second chance.
Take me away!
You look like Madeline now. Go up the stairs.
No.
Go up the stairs. Go up the stairs, Judy. You're a fall.
Slowly, she goes up the dark stairs, followed by Scotty. She looks back at him as they move through the shadows. He looks up at her. He glances down at the floor below, then continues climbing the stairs in the darkness just behind her. He looks down again at the floor far below. He catches her up and pushes her on. She looks over her shoulder as he guides her up the stairs.
As far as I could get, but you went on. You remember? The necklace, Madeline. That was the slip. I remembered the necklace.
Let me go!
Oh, we're going up the tower, Madeline.
You can't, you're afraid!
Now we'll see. We'll see. This is my second chance. But you knew that day that I wouldn't be able to follow you, didn't you? Who was up there when you got up there? Elster and his wife?
Yes.
Yes, and she was the one who died. The real wife, not you. You were the copy. You were the counterfeit, weren't you? Was she dead or alive?
Dead.
When you...
Dead. He's broken her neck.
He'd broken her neck. Wasn't taking any chances, was he? So when you got up there, he pushed her off the tower. But it was you that screamed. Why did you scream?
I wanted to stop it, Scotty. I ran up to stop it.
You wanted to stop it. Why did you scream? Since you tricked me so well up to then, you played the wife very well, Judy. He made you over, didn't he? He made you over just like I made you over. Only better. Not only the clothes and the hair, but the looks and the manner and the words and those beautiful phony trances. And you jumped into the bay, didn't you? I'll bet you're a wonderful swimmer, aren't you? Aren't you? Aren't you? And then what did he do? Did he train you? Did he rehearse you? Did he tell you exactly what to do, what to say? You were a very apt pupil, too, weren't you? You were a very apt pupil. But why did you pick on me? Why me?
You're
off the accident. I was the setup, wasn't I? I was the setup. I was a made-to-order witness. I was...
Still gripping her, he smiles as he looks down.
I made it. I made it.
What are you to do?
He turns back to her.
We're going up and look at the scene of the crime. Come on, Judy. Come on.
He drags her through the trap door next to the bell and flings her over towards the arch, breathing heavily.
And this is where it happened. And the two of you hid back there and waited for it to clear, and then you sneaked down and drove into town. Is that it? And then you were his girl, huh? Now, what happened to you? What happened to you? Did he ditch you? Oh, Judy, with all of his wife's money and all that freedom and that power, and he ditched you. What a shame. And he knew he was safe. He knew you couldn't talk. Did he give you anything?
Yes, some money.
And the necklace. Carlotta's necklace. There was where you made your mistake, Judy. You shouldn't keep souvenirs of a killing. You shouldn't have been... You shouldn't have been that sentimental.
He sways, perspiring.
I loved you so, man.
Scotty. I was safe when you found me. There was nothing that you could prove. When I saw you again, I couldn't run away. I loved you so. I walked into danger, let you change me because I loved you and I wanted you. Oh, Scotty, please. You love me. Keep me safe.
Please. It's too late. It's too late. There's no bringing her back.
Please.
They stand by the open arch and kiss. Terrified, she looks over to a shadowy figure coming up the stairs.
No.
I heard voices. God have mercy.
She's fallen from the tower. The nun crosses herself and rings the bell. Scotty steps through the arch out onto a ledge and looks down, arms hanging loosely by his side, his tie blowing in the wind. The end.